Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, if you've ever felt like you're doing everything right, working hard, maybe saving what you can, but still feel like somehow you're falling behind where the real wealth is growing, well, today's deep dive might just explain why.
Yeah, it really gets to the heart of that feeling.
We are diving deep into Thomas Piketty's foundational work, The Economics of Inequality.
It's foundational, absolutely. This is the book that really gives you the, let's say, structural explanation for that disconnect. Piketty doesn't just describe inequality. He systematically takes apart the actual mechanisms that create it and keep it going.
Right.
And maybe most importantly, he pushes back hard against this really optimistic idea that modern economic growth just automatically leads to fairness, to equity.
So it's not just an accident on the market.
Not according to Piketty. He argues inequality is, well, it's a deep-seated feature of capitalism. And it's shaped much more by, you know, political choices, social norms, historical decisions, than by some kind of economic destiny.
Okay, so our mission today is really to boil down those core drivers for you. We want to give you the historical context, the evidence, so you can move past maybe the usual talking points and really engage with what the data shows. Before we dive into all that data, though, let's talk a bit about the person, Thomas Piketty. Mm. He's a pretty well-known French economist, helped found the Paris School of Economics.
Mm-hmm.
What always gets me is how young he was. Got his PhD at 22, taught at MIT for a bit, then went back to France. Quite the start.
It really is. And what makes his work stand out, I think, isn't just clever theories. It's the sheer research grunt work. Mm-hmm. He really pioneered pulling together these enormous historical data sets.
We're not talking about just recent numbers, are we?
No, we're talking centuries. He dug into tax records, specifically across multiple countries going way back. It's kind of incredible.
Wow, tax records from centuries ago. That sounds like a monumental task, not just looking at overall GDP, but actual individual-level data over generations.
Exactly. It was, frankly, revolutionary for economics. Before him, economists were sort of flying blind on long-term wealth trends. So his arguments, they're really grounded in this massive amount of empirical evidence. It makes them hard to just brush off as, you know, purely theoretical.
And this book, The Economics of Inequality, it's sort of the blueprint for his later big one, right?
Yeah.
Capital in the 21st Century.
Precisely. It's more concise, maybe more accessible, but it lays out all the core ideas.
So let's get to that core premise then. What's the main goal of this book?
Fundamentally, it's about equipping the reader, giving you the concepts, the history, the tools to understand why inequality exists, how we even measure it, and what forces make it rise or fall. He really tries to keep the academic jargon low.
Which has helped.
Definitely. In his central argument, it's deeply political. He states it pretty clearly. The level of inequality isn't some fixed economic law. It's determined by policy choices, how we tax, how we fund education, the kind of welfare state we build.
Okay, policy choices. And he makes a key distinction early on, doesn't he, between income and wealth.
Crucial distinction. You've got income inequality. That's the flow, right? The money you earn each year from your job or investments. Then you have wealth inequality, that's the stock, everything you own, your assets minus your debts, accumulated stuff.
And how do those two relate in the real world according to his data?
Wealth is always much, much more concentrated than income, like orders of magnitude more. And that concentration of wealth leads directly to Piketty's big warning that without deliberate, strong government action, advanced capitalist economies tend to drift back towards what he calls patrimonial capitalism.
Patrimonial capitalism. Sounds a bit historical, almost feudal. What does that mean for us today?
It essentially means an economy increasingly dominated by inherited wealth, a kind of trust fund economy, you could say. The key dynamic driving this, and this is central to everything, is when the rate of return on capital on existing wealth.
The money your money makes.
Exactly. He calls that $3. When TUP is consistently higher than the rate of overall economic growth, the growth of wages and output, which he calls mot capital, well, then you have a problem.
Through delay.
When TUP is greater than ALI, wealth automatically concentrates at the top. It grows faster than the economy itself. Inherited wealth pulls away from wealth earned through labor. That's the engine he identifies.
Okay, that's the core idea. Let's get into the evidence. Part one, he talks about measurement. You mentioned income versus wealth, but he also says looking at averages or even the Giugiaroni coefficient can be misleading.
Yeah, the Gini's gives you one number for the whole spread, but it can hide what's happening at the extremes. Piketty argues it's often much more revealing to track the share of total income or wealth held by the very top, the top 10% or even the top 1%.
So focus on the concentration at the peak.
That's where you see the big historical shifts most clearly.
Okay, then part two shifts focus. First, to labor income, why do wages differ so much? And he introduces this famous concept, the race between education and technology.
Right. Think of it like this. Technology is always evolving, creating demand for new, often highly specific skills. Think coding, biotech, advanced manufacturing.
Stuff that pays well because fewer people can do it initially.
Exactly. So technology on its own tends to widen the wage gap. It increases demand for high-skill workers relative to others.
But education is the counterforce.
That's the idea. Education supplies the skills the technology demands. If education systems are broad, accessible, and high quality, they can produce enough skilled workers to meet that demand, which should, in theory, narrow the wage gap again. It's a constant race.
And he uses the U.S. as a prime example, right? Since the 80s.
Yes. He argues that the big jump in U.S. wage inequality starting around 1980 happened because educational progress, especially at the broad base, didn't keep up with the pace of technological change. Education started losing the race, basically.
That makes sense for wages. But you said wealth inequality is way bigger. How does he connect earned income to these massive fortunes?
This brings us back squarely to Will Jurlers. It's about how capital, how wealth itself accumulates over time. The concentration depends on a few things. How much people save, yes, but crucially, on that rate of return compared to overall economic growth Wellers.
So even if I save diligently for my salary?
Your savings are growing roughly in line with maybe a bit more if you invest well, but tied to the overall economy. But someone who inherits a large amount of capital, say a diversified portfolio of assets,
their wealth might be growing at rate dollars, which Piketty shows is historically often higher than the dollars.
Significantly higher on average over the long run. And that's the core problem. When Street consistently beats a dollars, wealth that already exists compounds much, much faster than new wealth can be created through labor and saving.
It's like passive growth outstrips active earning.
Over generations, absolutely. Inheritance then becomes incredibly powerful. It risks creating a society where your economic destiny is determined more by who your parents were, how much capital you started with, than by your own talent or effort. A patrimonial society, not a meritocratic one.
That's a pretty stark picture. And this historical perspective leads him to challenge a major economic idea, the Kuznets curve.
Oh, completely. For a long time, the thinking based on Kuznets' work was sort of optimistic. It suggested that as countries industrialize and get richer, inequality first rises, but then it naturally starts to fall, like an inverted U-shape.
A self-correcting mechanism.
Right. But Piketty, looking at his centuries of data, basically said, hold on, that's not what happened.
What did happen then, during the period inequality did fall, roughly 1914 to 1970.
He argues it wasn't some gentle, natural economic process. It was, frankly, violent and exceptional. It was driven primarily by the massive destruction of capital wealth during the two world wars and the Great Depression.
Literally destroying the fortunes of the wealthy.
Yes. And then, critically, it was reinforced by deliberate political choices. The introduction of very high progressive income and inheritance taxes, and the building of the modern welfare state, Social Security, public pensions, etc.
So the golden age of equality wasn't the norm. It was the result of catastrophe plus policy.
That's his argument. It was an anomaly, not the natural endpoint of capitalism, which implies that the recent rise in inequality since the 1980s might be a return to the historical norm, driven by policy changes away from those mid-century interventions.
Okay, if policy was key to reducing inequality then, what tools does he focus on for addressing it now?
It really centers on the role of the state. He strongly defends progressive taxation, taxing higher incomes and larger fortunes at significantly higher rates. And a robust inheritance tax is crucial for him.
Not just for revenue, but specifically to slow down that Lockean engine at the very top.
Exactly. It's about curbing the intergenerational concentration of wealth. And alongside taxes, he emphasizes the social state public investment in things like pensions, healthcare, and especially accessible, high-quality education.
Because education helps win that race against technology.
And because these social programs act as a powerful form of redistribution, compressing the differences in disposable income and providing a safety net and opportunity for those starting with less capital.
Okay, let's try to pull together the big themes here. What are the main messages you should really take away from this? Theme one seems obvious.
Inequality is political. Fundamentally, it's not just an economic outcome. It's the result of choices, of power struggles, of laws and regulations we collectively decide on.
Which is kind of hopeful, in a way. It means it's not set in stone. Change is possible if the political will is there.
That's the implication. Then theme two has to be that Hallstrom dynamic. That's the engine.
The fact that returns on capital tend to outpace overall economic growth, It just structurally favors existing wealth.
Right. And it helps explain that feeling we started with, why working hard and saving sometimes feels like you're running in place compared to those with significant assets.
Yeah, that really resonates. Theme three.
The importance of the state. The mid-20th century showed that specific policies, progressive taxes, the welfare state, did create a more egalitarian society. The rollback of those policies since the 80s coincided with inequality surging again.
So the design of our tax and social systems isn't just tinkering. It shapes the whole structure of society.
Hugely. And finally, theme four, inheritance versus meritocracy.
If inherited wealth becomes too dominant, it really challenges the idea that we live in a meritocracy where success is based purely on talent and effort.
It forces us to look much harder at the fairness of the starting line, not just the race itself. Are we okay with birthright playing such a huge role?
Piketty definitely has a way with words, too. Some of his core ideas are really memorable.
They are. That central point about politics is often paraphrased, something like, the history of the distribution of wealth has always been deeply political. It cannot be reduced to purely economic mechanisms.
It puts agency back into the equation. It's not just numbers. It's about power and choices.
Exactly. And then there's the point about the mid-century anomaly. He essentially says the reduction in inequality between, say, 1914 and 1970 was mainly because of war and the violent shocks that followed.
A stark reminder that the good old days of equality weren't a gentle evolution. They were born from crisis.
Right. It means we can't just assume things will naturally get better again. And that other famous one about wages.
The race between education and technology.
The evolution of wage inequality can be seen as the outcome of a race between education and technology. It's such a clear framework. And it's basically a call for investing in education as the key tool labor has to keep up.
So bringing this all home for someone listening, how can you apply these ideas day to day?
Well, first, it makes you a much more informed citizen, doesn't it? When you hear about policy debates, tax cuts, education funding, inheritance laws, you now have this framework.
Okay, how does this affect the Reg-Ida dynamic? Who benefits? Is it likely to increase or decrease wealth concentration? Does it favor capital or labor?
Precisely. It gives you a lens to see beyond the immediate talking point.
And personally, it might reframe how you see economic success or struggle, perhaps?
I think so. It helps explain some of the structural headwinds people face. It provides context for why sometimes hard work alone doesn't lead to the expected economic gains. It shifts the focus a bit from just individual effort to understanding the larger system you're operating within.
Which can be, maybe, both sobering and empowering.
Yeah. And for anyone interested in policy or advocacy, the book clearly points to the levers that have historically made a difference. Progressive taxation, inheritance taxes, strong public education. It tells you where interventions have been effective.
Okay, final thoughts. What was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you revisiting this?
For me, it's always that realization that today's high inequality isn't really new. It's more like a return to the historical norm for capitalism, that brief mid-20th century period of relative equality. That was the exception. It really flips the narrative.
Yeah, that's powerful. My lasting insight is similar, is the emphasis on choice. Piketty's overwhelming evidence shows that the distribution of wealth and income isn't some natural law. It's a result of collective decisions.
His work isn't necessarily anti-capitalist, I'd say. It's more of a very well-documented argument for regulating capitalism more intelligently, specifically to counter its tendency towards extreme concentration, towards oligarchy, really. It's about making sure democratic choices, not just inherited wealth, shape our future.
A crucial message for our times. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.